listening to Living with ADHD and CPTSD, available on Apple and wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Living with ADHD and CPTSD. Today's CPTSD episode is going to be about self-isolation, a topic that for a lot of people is very important and very real to them and to others that they know who have CPTSD. So, CPTSD, of course, is from repeated trauma from a loved one through neglect, abuse, whether it's mental, physical. And we often, you know, create child parts. And as we grow older and we move past that, we still experience flashbacks and triggers in society that make us relive our traumatic experiences. The aggression and the anger and the abuse and feeling like we're being neglected. And what it can do is it often will involve, or over time, with people who are repeatedly suffering from triggers and flashbacks and are not getting any help and feel alone and feel scared all the time, end up self-isolating. And the reason is because it feels safe and it allows them to be safe rather than being with someone or being around people that they don't trust and don't know if that person or people are safe for them. Okay, so I'm going to read this quick article here, and then I'm going to discuss, of course, my own experience with it as usual. So here we go. All right, the reasons people with complex PTSD self-isolate. Let me start by saying this may be a trigger warning for some, and I apologize to anyone who may find this emotionally disturbing, but I feel this needs to be said so it can be better understood. To say the past is alive in the form of gnawing inferior discomfort is an understatement. Yes, it's alive. It can't be shut off or escaped. It wakes us up with nightmares. It screws with our appetite and our weight plummets. It causes headaches, nervous conditions, hives, anger, depression, and anxiety. These are on a good day. On a bad day, many feel hopeless, suicidal. It has us believing we somehow deserve the trauma. It keeps us chained to the narrative taught in childhood that we weren't good enough, or when we got another beating, or when our caregiver told us we were never wanted, when we cried ourselves to sleep at night, only to relive another round of it the next day or the next week. We learn to hide the bruises by not dressing out for phys ed. We learn to fake a smile. We learn to always have a book with us so that we would look busy and not be bothered. We began losing ourselves in those books, and they became a much needed distraction and our best friend. These familiar cycles become comforting in a twisted way when it's all you've known and all you've been taught to believe you're worth. Anyone who has experienced trauma understands this simple equation. Past event plus trauma equals the potential to relive the trauma through other events. When trauma is complex, multiply what is felt by the total number of events, which can exponentially increase the emotional trauma experienced. For many who battle CPTSD, they can wind up living in the past, unable to move past the pain and struggle to heal from it. They feel trapped, alone. And, believe it or not, some with CPTSD actually prefer being alone. Do we want to self-isolate? To say fuck no wouldn't be fair or entirely accurate. Sure, on one hand, fuck and no who would intentionally want to spend their days avoiding the Amazon courier's knock at the door or the guy who asked you out at the gym? Yet these can, and often do, become triggers. Reminders that there is a world outside the safety of your home, the comfort of your bed, and the protection of your family. So, you ask for your packages to be left in the backyard to avoid having to answer the door. You give up your gym membership because the guy at the gym reminds you of your ex who traumatized you and replaced you so fast. You'll learn the hard way how easily some people can discard a human being. You opt for the DIY YouTube workout videos. You learn to forward your calls, and you learn the off hours at the store so you can shop when it's less people-y. On the other hand, yes, we want to isolate ourselves from the potential of being re-traumatized. So we build our walls higher and our armor stronger. We find comfort and peace in nature, animals, journaling. We learn to exchange loud and overcrowded places for time alone. We've learned the value of quality over quantity. We've learned the importance of going within and healing our soul from the damage. Because anyone who has experienced complicated grief tends to feel mental fog, emotional exhaustion, and physical pain. We tire more easily. We can't juggle as many things as once anymore. We may not have the energy we once used to, and many don't care to. Taking life slower becomes therapy in and of itself. When a person has been traumatized and receives a diagnosis of complicated grief or CPTSD, it's often after a long-standing history of repeated traumatizations. When trauma is chronic, begins in early childhood or infancy, and is repeated, it's damaging on every level, mental, emotional, physical, and psychological. It damages how we understand ourselves and how we see the world. Many who have CPTSD struggle in differentiating between what's safe and secure versus what's familiar and comfortable. When safety and security are shattered in early childhood, a kid grows up learning things backwards. They begin attracting and are attracted to people and situations that are toxic. Some befriend people who are inauthentic or fall in love with people who are narcissistic. Some trust too easily or not at all, and they shy away from people in situations that are safe and healthy. This phenomenon is a result of the damage caused by repeated trauma. It affects thought, cognition, emotion, and a person's sense of safety. This is what sets a person up for further re-traumatization. Anyone who has had a rash of narcissistic relationships typically fits this bill. It's said that until we authentically learn to love ourselves, our relationships will be a repeat of our earliest traumas in one form or another. Those with CPTSD are at an increased risk of experiencing re-traumatization because of their prior history. Some say it's like blood in the water to a shark, so maybe that's one reason they choose to self-isolate, to lower the probability of being seen as prey. Others have a different sense of how they see the world after repeated trauma and abuse, and have chosen to keep their circle extremely small while only letting in family. Reasons for self-isolation. According to Dr. Judith Lewis Herman, she proposed three stages of healing from complex trauma, which include establishing safety, mourning, and grieving, and re-establishing connections. These three stages are non-negotiable for healing. It can take years to move through one stage, especially when establishing a sense of safety for yourself. Research suggests that those with complicated grief or a diagnosis of CPTSD tend to be more avoidantly attached, especially when the abuse and trauma began in childhood. For example, a recent study suggests an avoidant dismissive attachment style is significantly correlated with both the core system of PTSD and the disorders of self-organization seen in complex PTSD. Other research has suggested that an avoidant attachment style seen in CPTSD is one of the most important distinguishing differences between bipolar disorder and a disorganized attachment that is common. There are several reasons why a person with CPTSD will choose to self-isolate. A few of the common ones include cyclic nature. This identifies the repetition compulsion in which Freud often spoke. With repetition compulsion, when a child is traumatized and it has not been dealt with or healed, the trauma can lay dormant until it is triggered awake by another similar trauma. For example, in simplifying Freud, we may be unconsciously drawn to people as partners who represent our unhealed core wounds, thus re-triggering the core wound and repeated trauma. This may crop up in dating someone who is scary similar to how your mother behaves, her personality quirks, her own disorders, or her reactivity when triggered. Or it may show up in dating someone who is like your father, who was emotionally cut off, avoidant, and abandoned you in childhood. If these situations have been experienced often enough, a person with complicated grief or CPTSD may decide to throw in the towel and avoid relationships altogether, where isolating themselves is less of a risk to their emotional safety. It's safe. The biggest aha is that by staying isolated, we feel safe. It's true. But it becomes circular. We feel a sense of safety by disconnecting and isolating ourselves, so we continue to do it. In time, we begin upping the ante in how much we avoid. Instead of only going to the store during the off hours, we now avoid the store altogether. Or call in to Amazon for delivery and to leave it in the backyard. Or we send a family member out for groceries. Connection is too exhausting. Connection may include any communication with friends, family, or loved ones. Many times, when a person has experienced complicated grief or CPTSD, relationships become secondary to being alone. It can take too much energy trying to talk, trying to fake happy, or in answering questions from loved ones. Small talk can become annoying, and when a person has experienced complicated grief, it's like they can see through the BS, or just don't want to expend the energy dealing with it. Some just realize the shift in their priorities where casual conversations and superficial connections just don't cut it anymore. Some may lose touch with those in their lives and may not see the possible dangers of continued self-isolation, which can include an increase in depressive symptoms, even suicidal ideation. As you begin working through your disconnection, you start to become more connected to yourself, to your family, your friends, your therapist. You begin peeling back the layers that have kept you disconnected, and little by little, you start understanding the whys and the hows and rebuilding your sense of security. This doesn't happen easily or quickly. I think one of the biggest mistakes made is trying to rush healing, where if we try to half-ass it or band-aid it, we run the risk of falling right back into the same pattern of traumatization. Emotional band-aids are short-term efforts that don't last. They can't. Why? Because when the core issues are dodged and avoided, they're still there. They are only masked. Learning to reconnect and to begin re-engaging with ourself is a process. We have to dig deep to figure out what has been keeping us disconnected and how to begin taking the first steps in reconnecting with our life. People who survived complex trauma don't need pity. We need empathy, compassion, understanding. We need one person we can rely on through thick and thin. We need a secure base. And through the process of healing, we learn to give ourselves that secure base. Do you agree? All right. So, self-isolation. It's, like it says, it's easier for a person who has dealt with complex trauma to not do things, to not go out, to not be with people, to not have friends. Rather than going out and having a good time with a close person, they would stay home, turn on the TV, order pizza, have some, I don't know, alcohol or wine, and watch a movie or TV all night. And then they fall asleep, feeling safe in their own house. Some can barely get out of the house because they feel scared that they're not in a safe zone, that they're vulnerable to anybody. I know that I have many times in the past, even before I knew I had complex PTSD, that I would do very much the same thing, because I wouldn't want to go out. I felt much more compelled to just stay inside, turn the TV on, and sit for hours on end watching TV. You know, get some snacks, make some food, get comfy, put the blanket on, you know, wear some comfy clothes, get all warm and feeling safe in my chair, and then just watch and watch and watch and watch, and close off society for the night. You can only take so much of the outside world, because you already don't trust anyone, or very few people. You know, I trust my family, I trust my brother, I trust a few close friends of mine. But keep in mind, this is in the past, this isn't present time, okay? I would be more compelled to stay in than contact somebody and see if they wanted to go out, or take in an event with a lot of people around. And I definitely really hesitated when it comes to dating or to meeting new people. And if there was something that was potentially fun but had risks involved, like maybe meeting somebody new, whether it could be for romantic purposes or just for friends, I would more often than not revert back to making an excuse up or not wanting to go, period, and just not doing it. You have a sense of safety at home because it's where you are in control of what's happening around you. And you feel like when you're not in that area, you're not at your house or your apartment, and you're out and about in the world, whether it's at your job or maybe on a date or with friends, and or you're out for a walk, or you're out just going to the bar, you know, or a nightclub or something. You don't feel that safety, that connection of knowing that you're in control like you are when you're at home. It's very difficult and stressful and painful to get out and try something new, you know, take a risk and be bold or be brave and try something that maybe you haven't done before, or meet that brand new person that you've managed to find the courage to talk to online, but when you know the opportunity to come and meet them in person, even if it's just for drinks and maybe, I don't know, play pool at the pool hall, the stress and the anxiety and the fear start to grow, especially as you get closer to that hour when you need to go and you need to leave and meet that person. You're scared that you're gonna get hurt. You're scared that you're gonna be lied to or that you're gonna be manipulated. And the fear, it can be triggering and it can manifest in your mind and circle and grow stronger and stronger to the point where you just don't feel like doing anything. And because it's easier and safer to stay home and avoid it than getting out there and trying and being brave for yourself. The potential, you know, like, in your brain, the odds are not in your favor because you are, especially if it's really severe, in your mind, you really believe that there are good odds that you're going to get hurt or that you're going to get triggered and you're going to relive all the trauma from something that occurs out there that's not related to what you've gone through, but it triggers you anyways. And so you don't feel safe. And you are trying to avoid the possibility of having a trigger and becoming blended and becoming re-traumatized to exposure because of your past. It takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of strength and bravery to get out into the world. And I know from personal experience just how difficult it can be to put yourself out there and try new things or meet that person who could be the next, you know, your next significant other. You know, like I remember when I was trying to date and I was online and I was, because I had no ability to, if I was in person and I, you know, just doing something and I saw somebody who looked pretty and was interesting. And, you know, I thought in my mind at the time that it would be, that would be really cool to get to know her. You know, you come up with all these ideas in your mind and these thoughts and your fantasy kind of grows. But then when it actually came down to doing it, you know, to actually go up to her and start the conversation and get to know her. And then if things start to, you feel like they're going well, to actually ask that person out, like to ask her out on a date, suddenly you would get all that, that scared, nervous feeling. Like you'd be, it'd be overwhelming. You'd be anxious and you'd be too nervous to even try. And all you could feel in your mind is, I can't do this. This is too scary. What if she says no? This is, you know, like it's not going to work. I'm going to be ashamed. I'm going to be embarrassed. You get all these negative feelings and it just starts to grow. And before you know it, you get triggered and you're reliving that, that trauma of rejection, of abandonment. And you would rather just not do it and miss out on a possible great opportunity to meet somebody, all because you are too scared to face that there is a possibility that she could say no, or that you could maybe get a yes, but then the next date or the third date, she's going to find out who the real person is and she's going to laugh at you and she's going to walk away, and then you're going to get your heart broken and you're going to be hurt. So it's easier for you to not do it. And so you end up isolating and not, you know, especially if you repeatedly have this problem and you keep convincing yourself that it's not a good idea, that it can't be done, that you shouldn't do this, that it's just safer to not do it. You eventually convince yourself to enough to just stay home and to never go out or to never take a risk and to never try something new because you don't want to get hurt. And if you don't get hurt, then you always feel safe. And you also avoid possibly getting triggered and experiencing all that pain and fear and hurt that you experienced in your past. When I met my girlfriend, and it's been over 3 years now since I actually met her, we met online and we talked for a month. I think it was a month. And we got to the point where we decided to meet, and it took a ton of strength for me to do that. And I was actually amazed after the first meeting that I was able to do it so calmly, and I felt good about myself and I was quite happy with it. And it was a good positive step towards growth and rebuilding and moving forward in my life instead of regressing backwards. But, you know, it doesn't mean that I was healed. By no means was I healed or past the point of getting re-triggered. Now, keep in mind, I didn't know, of course, then that I had this. So I didn't, you know, I didn't know the words. I didn't know the meaning of it. I didn't know the connections. And this eventually did start to show up in the relationship, because when something would go wrong, you know, like you something happened and something didn't go the way you thought it would, and she would get upset, or she would be disappointed, or she'd be angry at you, immediately that feeling and that triggering the flashback to be, you know, someone like being disappointed in you and potentially leaving and abandoning you would start to creep in. And so that's what would be, it'd be like right on the edge of it. So the second that something disastrous would occur or potentially could occur, you would automatically have this fear that's inside you starting to build and starting to get worse and worse. And it would get to the point where, and it did, it got to the point where I was getting triggered at every slightest thing, and it didn't matter if she was upset or not. But the determination inside myself was stronger than running away and hiding. I think the only thing, though, is that it wasn't the best decision to just fight it. I should have done the work. I should have learned about what I need to do. I should have learned about CPTSD's symptoms and the signs of it and the dangers. And I should have done the proper processing and the work at an early stage and shown my parts that I was safe and that I would be okay. And then it was up to me to determine my next step and not be afraid. I should have done that because I probably could have avoided a lot of problems in the future if I had taken the right steps and worked on it instead of fighting through it and, I guess you could say, ignoring my parts when they got triggered. You know, it's things like this that you wish you could go back and change your future, your past, but you really can't. So isolation for everybody, or for the majority of people who have CPTSD, especially if it's really severe, can cause so many complications, so many problems, and it can make it to the point where you might just feel like you don't think it's worth living anymore because of the fact that nothing you ever do feels safe. And the only way to get through life is to just be alone and never go out. Because you don't want to risk re-triggering and feeling the pain and being scared and reliving that experience. Because when you have CPTSD and your parts are there and they're experiencing the pain and the scared, you know, that terror and that horrendous reliving of being beaten or being yelled at and being told that you're no good, that you're not worth being around, that they wish that you had never been born, all these different things that someone who is neglecting you and abusing you mentally or physically would do. So, and it's not like you can just have the flashback and go, okay, yeah, all right, and then you're over it. It could basically take you out of commission for the entire evening. So imagine going out, and if you really have no control over it, or if you haven't done any work, you have no idea how to handle it, and you go out with some friends and you get triggered, something you see in front of you or something that happens within the group triggers you, you're going to be, well, let's just say it wouldn't be pretty, and you'd be sitting there and you'd be triggered and you'd be scared and you'd be frozen, or you might say something to your friend, you might do something that is harmful or regretful because you aren't yourself. You know, you got a child part in control, you're blended with your system. It's very dangerous and very not a very good thing. So you soon learn that the easiest way to avoid having this is to stay home and dissociate or zone out and just avoid any possibilities of it happening. while it's the safe way to go and you don't have to worry about getting triggered ever again, not to say that it would never, ever happen, you can't live your, you can't continue to live your life this way. Because unless you're a multimillionaire who doesn't ever have to work, has unlimited means of money, and maybe you only have a few friends that you feel comfortable with, you're gonna go broke, and you're gonna be out on the street because you won't be able to pay your rent, because you won't be able to work, you won't be able to see your family, you basically by yourself. And it could get to the point where you just don't feel like life is worth living anymore, and unfortunately you will take your own life or attempt to, and then you could get committed into a mental hospital and then you're really done. So the only way that you can get past being, it's the self-isolation pattern, is you have to find the strength in yourself to go and get proper help. You got to find somebody who specializes in CPTSD therapy, definitely preferably someone who does structural dissociation theory, can work with you, can teach you how to work with your parts, how to do proper processing, how to do the four steps, how to ground, how to, you know, when you do get triggered and you're experiencing trauma, like you're reliving your trauma, how to work with your system so that you can recover, how to heal, how to gain your, get, you know, you're trying to work with your parts to gain their trust. And when you gain their trust, then you start to build those neural pathways in your brain. And eventually when, like down the road, depending on how often you go to therapy and how well you're doing in therapy and how hard you're working, a couple of years, maybe a year or 2 years or so later, you can start experiencing what it's like when you actually are able to stay in control despite having a trigger, instead of completely being in, feeling in danger and feeling like your life's under threat. You're able to maintain your adult self and talk to your parts while you're working through this trigger and the trauma that you're experiencing in the moment. You're able to stay in control, stay as the adult, and not experience it in the same way that you did when this first occurred. And then over time, as you continue to do your work and you continue to heal more and more and more, you will be at a point where you don't fear new things or new people. You're not afraid to go out and try to have a good time without thinking about getting triggered, because you do realize that if there is a possibility that you're going to get triggered, that you're going to be able to handle it and you're going to be able to stay in control and deal with the trigger and recover. And instead of having to go home or be out of commission for a day or two or three, then you just have to sit by yourself, breathe for a bit, ground, you know, talk to your system, and then you'll be able to hopefully rejoin that group and continue your night. People who have done a lot of therapy and a lot of work with their system are at a point like that where they're able to deal with the trigger, work with their system, you know, integrate more, do more work, and then be able to overcome the fears and the emotions that you feel from the experiencing this trauma or the re-experiencing of it. And then you're able to stay as yourself and continue doing what you're doing. It does take a lot of work, but the alternative of self-isolating is only going to make things in your life be at a point where you just feel like it's hopeless and you can't go anywhere and you can't do anything and that it's just over. I get where it comes from and I get that it's scary. I know that my trauma and my experiences, the severity of it, is not as severe as some other people with CPTSD have had. I do feel fortunate, but at the same time, I know that it is a lot harder for other people out there in the world who have CPTSD to do what is necessary to begin the healing process so that you can move forward in life and be happier and not have to worry about triggers all the time and experiencing trauma. And then maybe you can meet somebody who cares about you and you'll be able to be happy together with someone else. It takes a lot of work. It's pretty clear that it's going to take a lot of work and it's going to be difficult. But doing the work, doing your four-step processing, rebuilding that neurointegration in your mind between the parts in your adult self is very, very important and very valuable work that will help you in the long run overcome the trigger and heal your system so that someday you won't be controlled by the traumatic events that you experienced as a child or as an adolescent, and you can move forward in life. It's extremely important. Self-isolation is not something that anybody really wants to do. I can't imagine that if I could, like today, there are moments, I'm not gonna lie, I have had moments in recent memory where I did feel that it was safer for me, for my system, to be by myself for the evening rather than go and just and have conversations or be around my girlfriend, because I didn't necessarily feel safe in the moment, and I felt like I was going to re-trigger and that would not be beneficial for my system at all. So I felt that it was safer for me to be by myself in my room and take care of myself or dissociate for a little while and just try to relax and try to calm my system and reground. There are times when I do have to, and it has worked. I have been able to get to the point where, despite the fear, I have been able to say to myself, it's okay. I can do this. I can walk out of this room and go to her and be honest and be upfront and be an adult and be brave to her and say what needs to be said and not be afraid of the possibility of maybe another conflict, or maybe I accidentally say something that is misunderstood and she gets upset. I'm not afraid of that. There have been the odd time lately where I kind of want to just not do anything, but I know that it's more beneficial for me in the long run to know that I can do this, that I can confront my fear and have my system on my side and trust me enough that they believe that I can do this, that I am capable of doing it, and then go and resolve the issue rather than just avoid any kind of conflict because it's too scary. It's not scary anymore, which is the nice thing. It beats isolation. Isolation has its benefits. They're minimal when you really look at it from a bigger picture. Getting your system to trust you and to do the work and to feel comfortable and to feel safe in your environment and safe around other people that you trust is especially beneficial in the long run and in the short term as well, because the more that it occurs and the more that you're able to show your system that it can be done, that you are in control and that it is up to you to be safe and to know when it's not, and to trust yourself and for your system to trust you at the same time, it's very beneficial for you in the healing process. Because if you experience the good parts, like you go out and you say to yourself, okay, parts, I know I can, this is something I can do. I am capable of being the adult. I am capable of discussing this and not being scared, knowing that there is a good benefit that comes from what I'm doing. And then you go out and you actually do it, and you show your system that, hey, look, yeah, see, I can do this. This is good. This is safe. This is happy and comfortable for me. They trust you more, and you build that neural net in your mind, and it grows and it gets thicker and it gets stronger. And then there's less effort involved the next time that you have to do it. It's really beneficial. It's amazing how that can work for you when you actually see it in action and your parts can experience the positivity from what you've done. And then they see that, yeah, they indeed can trust you, which is amazing. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to be a lot of ups and downs. You're going to have good times. You're going to have moments where you regress because maybe you make a mistake. Maybe there's things that you think you're safe or you feel it, but maybe it's not quite there. You know, like it's a delicate balance, and you have to trust your system. You have to, and if your parts tell you that you're not ready or they don't feel safe for you doing this, you have to listen to their part, to these parts. You have to give to them what they're asking for. So if they say to you, I don't feel safe doing this, can we do this some other time? Maybe next time it'll be easier. Maybe I will feel safe doing it. Please don't. If you tell them, okay, I understand, we won't, but it's all right, you know, no big deal, they will feel comfortable knowing that you're listening to them, and that the safety will start to grow, and you'll be more comfortable and they'll trust you more. And then if you do the work with them and you update them and you say, hey, look, I feel like this is something I can do. I am ready to do this. I feel good about it. I feel safe. That next time they may very well say to you, okay, yeah, you know what? This actually does feel safe. I too trust you enough that you can do this. And then you go and you do what you say you're going to do, and it works, and it does come out in a good situation, and you have positive feedback. Your parts are going to go, hey, he was right. You know, that actually did work. Good job. And now there's growth and there's healing. This is how it works. Sometimes it's going to take a very, very long time to get there. Sometimes it may happen immediately. It depends on how well they trust you. It depends on the parts that are involved. And it depends on the work that you're doing. It's all related together, and it's very helpful. And if you do it properly and you do it well, you're going to feel the benefits, and you're going to feel the health, the healing, and the progress from what you're doing. It's very important. And I would definitely recommend, I'm not saying go against your system. I'm not saying do what the adult wants and disregard what the child parts are thinking and feeling. Don't do that. You have to have their trust in order for you to move forward and to start healing and for them to trust you. If you can do that, then you make progress. You get closer to that goal of feeling, of being healed, so that you can always do these things without worrying or the risk of being triggered. Takes time, takes a lot of work, takes a lot of effort. Therapy is the best way to get to that stage and get to that point. You do need to pay close attention to your system, and you need to follow their wishes. And if they say no, you got to respect that. You can't go against them. I remember learning the hard way. This is the last thing I'll talk about before I end here. I remember my girlfriend when we were first dating, and she was telling me about her parts, and she was telling me that she wants to do these things. She wants to say yes. She wants to go ahead and do it, but not all of her parts agree with it, and they're kind of not convinced. They don't know for sure, so she can't go against them. She can't go against their wishes. And I remember, and this was before my understanding, this is before I realized about my own complex trauma, I remember thinking to myself, I don't get it. Like the whole situation or the idea behind it, I could not understand. And this also happened, I think it was like 6 months or so before we decided to move in together, the initial discussion about it, I remember her saying, I'm not quite there yet. I still have to do some work with my parts. They need to trust me. They need to feel that this is safe along with me. And I did understand, but until I was experiencing it myself and doing work with my own parts as much as I did, then I could finally fully understand what she was talking about. And it makes a lot of sense. Everybody has to be on board in order to get further in the stages of healing and to get to the point where you can do these things. If the adult wants to do something, like wants to move in with their partner, wants to go out and have a good time, wants to try something new, maybe go on a road trip, but you have parts that aren't feeling safe, you can't go against their wishes, because then they're not going to trust you. They're going to think that you don't care about them, that you're abandoning them, or that you're not respecting the fears that they're having. You really do have to wait till they feel safe and they think that it's a good idea. Then you can continue on. It's a difficult process. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of exposure and a lot of repetitive work, like processing, in order to get to that stage. And then you're there. Okay, so yeah, don't... Isolation is only good up to a point, but you got to find the courage and the strength to get to a healing stage so that you can make progress and at some point eliminate the need to self-isolate. It's a lot of work. I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying it's a quick thing, but it's way better to be able to feel safe to go out and meet people or do things that make your life happy than stay at home and do nothing and never get anywhere. And maybe someday you get to the bottom so low that you just never get out. That's my point of view, and I hope that you agree. And if you do feel that you're stuck, reach out, find somebody out there, a therapist, or maybe you got a close friend that can help you. But you do need to find help, and you need to get out there and look for it. All right, everybody, that's the end of this episode for today. I hope this really was helpful, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to contact me and get in touch with me, my Twitter is at ADHD and CPTSD. You can always go to my website, which is www.livingwithADHDandCPTSD.ca. And I would love to hear from you guys. If there's anybody out there who would love to be on the show as a guest and would like to talk about their experiences, please contact me. You can email me. You can do my Twitter account. I would love to hear from you. I want to help people out there. I want them to feel safe. I want them to feel like they're not alone, that they can get help. And that's very important for me. So, yeah. Let's talk if you want to talk. I'm all open. I'm here to listen. I'm here to be there for you. So let me know. All right. Talk to you next week. Bye, everybody.